What's up, everybody? My name is Wes Goldberg. I'll be joined by my co-host David Ramil and our special guest Dave DeFore of the Count the Dings podcast network here in a little bit. We're going to talk about what the Miami Heat's problems are this season, of which there are many, and what the team can do about them. I think it's a good conversation. Dave DeFore is a good dude. He's good at this podcasting stuff, and it was fun to have him on the show. Then, after about 30 minutes or so, David and I will look ahead to next week's games and guess the Heat's record, and then we're done for the week. So thanks to everyone who subscribes to the show and rates it and reviews it on iTunes. It's a Friday episode of Locked On Heat. Let's get to it.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We're joined today by Dave DeFore, host of Nerder, She Wrote, and other podcasts on the Count the Dings Network. Thanks for coming on, Dave. My first question for you, how many Heat games have you watched this season and why?
I think I've seen like seven.
Okay. Wow.
And that's a lot.
Well, and you know what? This season has been interesting for me. I had personally just had like kind of a crazy summer. And so I made a commitment to myself and my wife that I was not going to be as nuts as I have been the last few seasons. And part of that is being smarter about how I watch teams, in particular bad teams, which the Heat are a bad team. And I didn't expect them to be this bad, but they're bad. And so what I do a lot of now is instead of watching a full game while it's live, I get to go into Synergy the next day and I can parse out, all right, I want to see what happened here when, you know, this team went on a run. And you know, usually it's the other team going on a run against Miami these days. Although their defense is not what the problem is. We'll get there. So I've watched like seven games in full, but I've seen a lot of clips. Let's put it that way. Of context clips.
I mean, seven games is more than I have, and I'm supposed to cover the team on a daily basis.
Oh, all right. Well, I watch a lot of basketball. I watch a lot of basketball, guys.
So in your Synergy binging, you're probably seeing that the Heat are missing a whole lot of shots at the rim. David and I have our own theory about why this is. David, regular David, not you, David.
Okay.
Have our own theory, we've discussed it on the podcast that this team just doesn't have a whole lot of high level athletes, and those tend to be the guys. You know, you could go as far as somebody as Giannis or LeBron, but you don't even have to get to that level of athlete. Those are the guys who are able to convert at the rim as much, and with Dragic being out as much as he has and just the natural decline that's come with his game with age, the Heat are missing just a ton of shots at the rim, and I think that's more than anything snake bit in their offense.
Yeah, it's hard to win if you're going to miss the easy shots. I mean, I know that's like next level basketball thinking, but the truth is the easy shots are the ones that matter. It's not hitting the tough shots. It's the stuff that your offense is designed to create, which is shots at the basket and open threes. That's how Spo coaches. And you know, how are their free throw? What's their free throw rate? I don't have it pulled up.
They're eighth in the league last time I checked in free throws. Getting to the line.
So they're doing a good job. So one function of the offense, right? Like getting to the basket means you're also going to get to the free throw line. So they're clearly getting there. They just aren't converting. And you know, that's gonna hurt you every time. I mean, like, it is pretty simple. Basketball, like, when you kind of boil it down, it's very simple. You have to make shots, in particular the easy ones, which are typically at the basket.
So I think that one of the biggest problems that everybody's kind of, at least lately, on their minds is the Hassan Whiteside situation. Obviously, it's a little exacerbated by what happened in the fourth quarter of the last game, a loss to the Orlando Magic, but it's been pretty wavering effort from him. Hasn't been consistent all season. Hasn't really been consistent since last year, if you want to really go into detail. But he's gone to the point where he's very problematic for this team's offense. What have you seen from Hassan in your analysis? And do you think that situation is salvageable?
Well, I mean, I think they're better with him on the court than when he's not.
Hassan Whiteside? Are we talking about the same Hassan Whiteside?
Yeah. I mean, do you disagree?
Yeah.
100%. Okay. All right. Let me rephrase this. I think their ceiling's higher.
Okay.
Because
that's
good
fair.
Hassan, good
that's
Hassan
fair, yeah.
is very good.
Yeah, but that dude hasn't been around for some time.
He's shown up a couple times. He started
against
the
Utah. In preseason, yeah. He was fine against Utah to show up Rudy Gobert. That's cool.
Exactly. And so I think that ideally you fix it and you get Hassan, but we've now seen this, you know, like we've heard this song before.
Exactly.
Yeah. But unfortunately you're not going to move him.
That's exactly right.
Because he's got that deal. So,
but do you move him to the bench? Because that's been the conversation on Heat Twitter lately is, do you just move? And yeah, you've got to deal with the locker room and personality issues. Mm-hmm. But do you just say, you know what? Because I don't know. I can't speak for regular David. But I know that I think that Bam Adebayo is just the better player at this point and that he ought to be starting.
Right.
Not only because he's the better player, but also because you just took him at the 14th pick, and it's sort of time to let him start and develop. And just for those two reasons, he should be on the floor.
And that means you have to start Kelly Olynyk as well.
Yes, and I think that's
you've
fine.
You got to pair
the two of them together.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it gives you a more dynamic offense. But here's the thing: if you sit Hassan, you might as well go ahead and tell him to stay home, because he's going to tank your locker room.
That's fine. I'm under the opinion of just wave and stretch him.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the Heat have tried to move him, and they can't. Couldn't get them.
Yeah, they didn't get the Mavericks to bite. They didn't get Minnesota to bite for Butler.
The only other team out there that makes even a little bit of sense is Washington, given that they are the worst rebounding team of like the last decade. But they don't want to take on more money, and that's the problem with Whiteside. If Whiteside was Jan Mahinmi type of contract at like 15, 16 million, maybe you could talk him into it. But when he's making 10 million more than that, it's tough.
Yeah, but if he was making 15, 16, he's not nearly as big of a headache.
That's correct. True, too.
Yeah, but that's the problem, though, is that he's getting paid that much to be so bad. I mean, and I see your point, and it's fair. I'm glad that you brought that up from an outsider's perspective, and I think we brought that up as well, that good Hassan is definitely worth having on the team, but that we don't see that as often as we'd like, and that's the problem there. And so they have to kind of find a way. And it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that Spoelstra, as good a coach as he is, and I think as respected as he is around the league, hasn't been able to figure out the Whiteside problem. And you know, maybe the team should have done a better job of understanding what they were taking on when they brought him on board on 2014. And, you know, that was on a relatively cheap deal when he was a 2-year deal worth $1 million each year. And then, of course, they signed him from $1 million a year to, you know, a $99 million deal in 2016. I mean, that was just unheard of. But anyway, you know, it's just strange to think that Spoelstra, who has managed LeBron James and Dwayne Wade at his worst and Chris Bosh, et cetera, can't seem to connect with Hassan Whiteside and get him to understand what his role should be and how to maximize his effort.
Well, I mean, I was under the impression that he was going to just be allowed to shoot threes and that was going to solve this whole problem from, you know, my summer reading. That's what I thought was going to happen. I mean, I don't know, but I think that this is a team that clearly should be thinking about the future, and the future is Bam Adebayo.
I think that's something all three of us and most of Heat fandom can agree on.
Did the Heat screw up and not recording Josh or trading Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler?
No. Josh Richardson, listen, man. People thought I was crazy last year when I said that Josh Richardson could follow that Kawhi Leonard sort of trajectory. Okay. Remember how Kawhi, like, he took like such a massive leap. And all of a sudden, he's like a top 10 guy. Now, I don't think Richardson's going to be a top 10 guy. I think he'd be a top 20 guy, top 25 guy.
That's a stretch, because I think we're starting to see that now.
His handle right now that's limiting him.
You're right. And we're also seeing the fact that he's really attempting to do a lot. And, you know, he's the team's primary ball handler with Goran Dragic out, their top playmaker, mm-hmm. their top defender. And so he's asked to do all this, and I don't think he's quite ready. And frankly, I don't think he'll ever be at that point where he can handle all those duties, which Kawhi
he's
really
doing
hasn't
pretty
had
pretty well, though.
He's doing fine, but he's been inefficient nice over the last few
the
games.
The thing that Kawhi had when he made that leap was he was bracketed by Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu, all these guys.
And Josh is doing it alone.
And yeah, you'd be like, okay, well, he's getting the minutes, he's getting the shots, he's getting the opportunity. That should help his development, but not really. You know, you kind of want the other guy there to do stuff. And the numbers bear this out, that he does better when there's another ball handler on the floor next to him, whether it be Winslow or Goran Dragic or somebody like that. And I think if you can get that guy next to him and let Josh Richardson sort of play second fiddle at times or and play him off the ball a little bit more, then it would actually help his development. But it's very clear that this team, the three young guys with Richardson, Winslow, and Bam, that is the future of this team. And you've got to try to move whatever else is not those three guys for whatever you can get. Small assets, just cap space or flexibility, whatever it is. And then the other part of that is to tank. And we are – I am firmly on the tank trade. David is a little bit less enthused about trying to find the next star in the draft. Where are you on this situation?
I would tank.
Yeah.
I would tank. And you know, when you've got a guy like Zion in the draft, if you get number one, I mean, that's a franchise-changing player.
But this team isn't that bad. I mean, with the Phoenixes of the world, but remember, aren't so bad.
The odds have changed, though.
Yes,
so
exactly.
You could be like the fifth worst, sixth worst team in the league, and you still got a pretty good shot at that number one pick. But in this draft, there are going to be a few guys. I mean, R.J. Barrett is going to be good.
Yeah.
Cam Reddish is going to be very good. Cam Reddish could wind up being the best of those three guys.
I'm a big R.J. Barrett fan, too. I'm a fan of all three of the Duke kids, but yeah. I like Barrett's ability to create off the dribble for others too. I wanted to briefly talk about those lottery odds because you're right. They did change this season and the Heat aren't going to be as bad as Phoenix, Chicago, Atlanta. Those three teams are like the masters of tanking. They are basically the warriors of tanking. Cleveland is super bad and Miami's just not going to be as bad as them. But then you've got right now at five, based on the standings, Brooklyn, and at number six you have New York, and at number seven you've got Miami. The Heat could be as bad as Brooklyn or New York. If they put their mind to it and really tried hard, they could be in that top five. And right now, Miami's odds for the number one overall pick, if the draft were to be today, is 7.5%. All of a sudden, if you lose, and they're only a game ahead behind, however you want to look at this, of Brooklyn and New York, if you get into that fifth spot at Brooklyn, all of a sudden your odds go from 7.5% to 10.5%.
Exactly.
For that number one pick. That top five, that five spot in particular is right where Miami should be aiming.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think you're right. And again, it's a good excuse to play Bam more and let him figure it out. And if you win, you win. That's great. Like, I'm not saying do a purposeful tank where you know, all right, well, we're not going to try to win games because you don't want to do that. That's bad for your culture.
If you're winning with Bam and Richardson and Winslow, then maybe that's great. Don't have to be tanking in the first place. Maybe, these are our guys.
Yep.
And I'm all for that. But to me, that's not the conversation. I've always thought a lot of people would be like, just sit everybody and field, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. out there. Get Yonte Maiden and Duncan Robinson and everybody from their G League.
No, I am down with playing Derrick Jones Jr. because he's a young guy. I think it's let's not call it a tank. Let's call it a development year, right? Like, I think it's great that they've been letting Josh Richardson make mistakes. I think that's important. Now, he's clearly more of like a Joe Dumars type player.
Okay.
Right.
Now, I think he's got a higher ceiling, right?
Yeah.
In the league, but he's a two guard. I think he's more of a classic two guard. He can, you know, he can catch and go, but I wouldn't necessarily want him creating off the dribble. And he's probably not going to be able to create for others off the dribble. Now, could he create for others attacking as a secondary playmaker? I think so. But you need to put him in the position to do that. Now, like you said, he's much more comfortable playing with like Goran or someone like that. You know, maybe if Waiters was healthy, that'd be a good guy to pair him up with. That's a joke, by the way. I'm just okay.
I wasn't sure. No, people are all over the map on Deion Waiters, and including the two co-hosts.
He's fun.
Here.
All right, here's my thing. He's not good, but he is fun.
And he is fun.
Entertaining as hell.
He is fun. Yes,
but he is not a good player.
Who needs
but
Zion Williamson?
I love him.
When you've got 300-pound Deion Waiters. Right?
Oh, come on. He's not quite. He's 290 tops.
Hey, okay, so I've got a question for both Davids here because it's two Davids and one Wes right now. So I'm just going to ask a question to both of you. I want you both, and let's start with our guest here. I think the Heat have four, because we mentioned the development year, and I like your phrasing there. If that's going to be the case, I think the Heat still need to make some moves by the trade deadline, preferably by the end of December when I think their veterans will have a little bit more value as opposed to a couple of months out of the playoff. I think they've got four guys that they could realistically trade. Goran Dragic, Wayne Ellington, Rodney McGruder, James Johnson. And I mention those guys because I think they have actual value and can help other contending teams. So how would you rank those four guys? And I'll just sort of let you freeform jazz this thing. If there's anybody that you think that another team should be really looking at.
Well, I think Goran clearly is the best player of that bunch. Mm-hmm. And primary creator type of guys are valuable. So, you know, even if he just goes and he's a backup, and that'd be an expensive backup for someone for the rest of the season, but he's on an expiring, right? I was actually trying to
player pull option.
Player option. Okay. And he's probably going to opt in.
Unless there's a team out there that's willing to give him, like, you know, stretch a few years, 3 or 4 years, and give him maybe a little bit less.
$19 million?
Yeah. So we're thinking, like, maybe there's a team out there that's willing to give him $12 or $13 million, but give him the long term security.
Right. 3 years, 36, something like that. Yeah, exactly. Possibly. So that player option, though, is going to get in the way.
Yeah.
Because if someone wants to trade for him, they're going to want to know he's going to turn it down. And it's going to be a short term move. But the truth is, at $18 million this year, that's actually not terrible to bring that guy in if you need a little. I mean, I would say like the Oklahoma City Thunder could be interested in Goran Dragic.
I was watching the Raptors last night.
Yeah.
Maybe coming off the bench for Toronto to anchor that bench unit that's not been good this year.
And Van Vliet has struggled with his health and whatnot, and they could definitely use Goran. But I don't think that. I don't see them doing it because they do value how much depth they have, and they'd have to consolidate some pieces to get Goran. You know, but maybe if there's a John Wall trade, maybe Goran could wind up going to Washington or to a third team. You know, like there's a lot of stuff out there.
Would you trade for John Wall if you're the Heat? Okay, all right. I'm just
there's
people who believe that they should.
Those people are nuts.
Okay,
listen, that contract is going to be bad next year.
It's right,
but Heat fans have been, you know, taught by Pat Riley to love the big name as much as possible. To always throw your hat in the ring whenever a big name is available, and to always expect, unfortunately, that you can land said big name.
So it's just John Wall, name, though. With John
Wall. Well, we know that,
right?
We know, but that's why we're the experts, Dave.
I wouldn't call myself an expert. I'll defer to you guys, but I would not be trading for John Wall. That's for sure.
So what about those other three guys?
You said Magruder, James Johnson, and Ellington. Now Ellington, if I'm a GM, he's the most interesting guy because of his skill set, 3-and-D wing, and he's only making $6 million a year, so it'd be very easy to just make that deal happen. Mm-hmm. You know, like a team like Houston should be kicking the tires on Wayne Ellington. Because
find a way to incorporate him so that they could maximize what he does? Like his, you know, constant off-ball movement. It almost seems like
he can't be Ariza.
No,
absolutely not.
He's not good enough defensively. That's the problem.
No. But he's a better shooter.
Yeah no doubt. But he needs a lot of space. At least that's how he's gone to the point here in Miami. He needs a lot of space. He's constantly running guys off screens. He would be to me a great fit in Philadelphia because his movement off-ball is a lot like JJ Redick's. Mm-hmm. So that seems like it would be a pretty good fit for him because they would run similar things, kind of what they did with Marco Bellinelli this year.
I thought Philly should have gone after him over the
free agency.
Yeah,
but I think he kind of had a wink, wink, nudge deal with the Heat front office. Were hoping.
Yeah.
I actually think for the Rockets, Magruder and James Johnson, both of them would be really good fits.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, James Johnson in particular. Because he's like he's not as good as PJ Tucker, but similar kind of profile.
Mm-hmm.
But can do stuff off the dribble a little bit too. Now you don't want him shooting off the dribble, but he can get to the basket off the dribble is what I mean, like on a catch. And Magruder, that would add some athleticism to that team that they're sorely lacking. But Ellington's really interesting for a lot of teams. I mean, the Lakers probably would love to talk to the Heat about Ellington.
He was a former Laker, wasn't he? They had their chance.
Yeah. you know, I think that, I mean, how about Minnesota for Ellington? You know?
Same thing. He was a Minnesota Timberwolves, so was he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been around a lot, and no team has been able to get the most out of him like Miami has. So that's my concern, is that maybe teams around the league kind of view him less valuably because
as a system guy.
Yeah, it's possible.
Spo system guy.
I think the system is conditioning, man. Like he's a guy who got to Miami and got in incredible shape and was able to do all this stuff where he's running off the screens, you know, constantly. And all of a sudden, oh, wow, he looks better. Weird. You know, like.
Right.
Yeah. I think people that consider a system, I think, are overthinking it.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about here? We've got a few minutes left. And you don't have a chance to just deep dive Miami Heat as much as you want, probably.
No, you know, it's funny. Like, because they're bad, I don't. Like, yeah, if they were a playoff, if I thought they were going to be a playoff team, I would definitely have.
They are going to make the playoffs today.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you really?
You think they're going to make a move?
Yeah, no, I don't. I don't see a move possible, unfortunately. I really think that the playoffs, you know, again, they're either going to be the eighth seed or just below that. And, you know, I just, they're not going to be a high lottery pick team. This team's not going to tank. And to be honest with you, I really think that the problem is, not the problem necessarily, but the concern is Dragic. Like, I think he's just still built to win now. And they're not going to shelf him. And I don't think they're going to move him either, because I don't know that there's a big market for him. So once he comes back, like, this record, as bad as it's been, it wouldn't have been as bad, in my opinion, with Goran healthy. I think they would have still gotten enough out of him as a complimentary ball handler, where they still would have been in many of the games that they've lost so far this season. So that's what we're basically talking about, is he's been the biggest difference maker, and his absence has been reflected in the team's record right now. So once he comes back to play, which we assume is soon, I think they can change things around. Like, they could go 0-6 on this road trip that they're going on, and that could change things completely. But even still, they're going to come back home. They're going to find ways to win. And honestly, I just don't have a lot of faith in either the Magic, the Wizards, or the Hornets to be able to hang on to the 6, 7, and 8 seeds in the Eastern Conference. So why not Miami? It seems like they're built to find a way to win, even if it winds up hurting them in the long run.
They are kind of that team that is constantly hovering between 6 and 10.
Yeah.
And they could easily be 6, but I just don't think it's smart. Yeah, I wonder if they would call the Warriors and try to trade for Kevin Durant. This is like my new pet thing, is that the Warriors should trade Kevin Durant since he's going to leave this summer.
Let's do Magruder, Dragic,
Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd have to lose some guys.
Yeah.
And then the Warriors are set up for another 5-year run.
That, I think, is awesome, to be honest with you.
David, you've proposed Winslow for Draymond Green straight up, if they were to kind of go the other way on that and trade Draymond instead of KD.
Which I think is also a possibility, right? That they would be more willing to keep Durant and ship out Draymond, who's, you know, somewhat limited perhaps in what he can offer in the future. I mean, I think that would be great. And I think from Miami's perspective, he's just the kind of guy that, you know, literally and figuratively kick everybody in the nuts in just the right way to get him motivated to play at a high level. And plus, the drama between him and Hassan Whiteside would be next level. I mean,
I don't know if Hassan,
worth the price of tickets alone. You know?
You wouldn't be able to keep Hassan on the team.
Wave and stretch.
Draymond would murder him.
Hey, either way, it's a win-win, baby. I love it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like, I love watching Spo work, and it's really a bummer that he just doesn't have more to work with. I mean, what he's done the last few years, he's essentially a wizard.
Yeah.
And this is the year it feels like the Magic just is worn out.
I've got you talking about Spoelstra. I kind of brought this up again recently with Wes, and he does not agree with me. But if this was any other team without the culture and the stability and what Spoelstra's accomplished, don't you think he'd be on the hot seat?
I think it's possible.
Okay.
But I don't know. He won 2 rings, and that has to matter.
It did, but it also helped to have LeBron James finals.
Sure, but Spo is not a bump. Spo is probably one of the 5 best coaches in the league.
Agreed.
And he's well regarded. And here's what I'll tell you right now. You know a coach is good by how long he wouldn't have a job if he was theoretically fired.
Oh, hell yeah. Right? 29 other teams would want him, right? I mean, exactly. With the exception of maybe Golden State and Steve Kerr, sure.
Right. But like, you look at Dwayne Casey. Dwayne Casey was hired the day after he was fired from Toronto.
Yeah.
Now, so that deal was probably already lined up, but Dwayne Casey's a good coach. Yeah. And I mean, you know, from the culture standpoint, he also is a good coach on the floor. You can actually watch and how he evolved over the course of his tenure in Toronto. Now, eventually most partnerships wear out, you know, Greg Popovich being the rare exception. I think Spo is much more in that Pop kind of mold where he's going to be able to be in Miami for 20, 30 years if he wants.
I agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you might be onto something. If he was coaching the Lakers, a team with no culture, or if he was coaching, you know, Orlando or something like that and had this run, he might be on the hot seat. But those championships have to matter. Like, I think Ty Lue shouldn't have been fired.
I know my co-host doesn't agree with you on that.
I don't think Ty Lue is a good coach, but I don't think that what they brought in to replace him with was any sort of improvement. I still don't understand the reason to fire Ty Lue seven Lue games in the season or whatever it was.
I think Ty Lue is a better coach than he gets credit for, but it's hard to tell because of LeBron. You can see his game-to-game adjustments were really good. Okay. His in-game adjustments, those left something to be desired, but game-to-game, he would make changes in playoff series, and they were clearly from him, and they were excellent. So I think we'll see at his next stop, because I do believe he'll come back. He's a much better coach than people think. Same with Spoelstra. A lot of people didn't think Spoelstra was that good. And then LeBron leaves and Spoelstra does a pretty good job with this weird roster that he got because LeBron left, you know, and it was a surprise and Bosch was out. But I don't think that Ty Lue is on Spoelstra's level by any means, but I think he's a much better coach than he will get credit for.
And I think go ahead.
I was going to ask him one more question heat related, but if you get something about the coaching talk,
I was just going to say, I think with Spoelstra, there's a reason why he was the guy banging the table for Jimmy Butler. I just think he's sick of basically, he's like, all right,
yeah,
I get it. You're giving me all these retreads, these rejects, these role players. I want a guy who I could really run stuff through. I think with Spo, yeah, I think in another organization that was capped out like Miami is right now, where, you know, if the fan base is getting a little antsy, you might see a coaching change. But with the Heat, luckily, I think they're smarter than that. They know that Spo is doing the most with this roster. It's not, this team isn't losing because of Spo. They are winning the games they're winning because of Spo. But David, go ahead with your question.
Okay. You've talked about Richardson. You talked about Adebayo, the third player there, as far as the team's young future, Justice Winslow. What do you see from him and what do you think his best fit is? Because we've talked about him being pretty much all over the floor, and the comparisons from Kawhi to Draymond, those won't end. And I'm just curious what your perspective is, because, you know, he could be anywhere on the floor. He's really good at bringing the ball up and creating offense. His shooting is still a little sketchy, and, you know, he doesn't finish at the rim at a high level like most of the Heat's roster. So what's your feel for Justice and where do you think he fits best?
Well, I mean, I think that the Draymond stuff is, I get it, because he's kind of an undersized four, like just his style of play. The positional flexibility on defense is great, but the lack of offense is just, I mean, it's tough because he's not the passer that Draymond is. He's not like that sort of engine of the offense type of guy where he can grab and go and hit a shooter and, you know. You can't operate out of the post with him, right? You're not going to run split cuts and have Winslow throwing passes like Golden State does with Draymond. Doesn't mean he won't eventually get there, but that's just not a thing. But I do think his defense, you can, he's a functional guy. I don't know if he's a starter necessarily, but he's definitely a rotation guy. He looks better this year than he possibly ever has. The numbers don't say that, but on the court, he looks more confident, looks more comfortable. And that could just be because he's getting the ball a little bit more. I don't know.
I think the numbers recently are in his favor when he's, now that he's coming off the bench in the last seven games. Mm-hmm. Miami's net rating it skyrockets when Winslow's on the floor, and a lot of time he'll play next to the starters after, you know, Spo gets through his rotations.
Yeah.
I like him in that Evan Turner role, like that the Portland has Turner playing in this year, where you bring him off the bench, you surround him with three or four different floor spacers, and you just sort of let him lead that unit. And then towards the end of games, then if he's sort of feeling it, you let him play next to the other four key starters. Right. Kind of like that role for him.
I'd love to see him play some small ball five.
He did it as a rookie. He hasn't done it since.
Yeah, exactly. I think that that's something else they could do. But ultimately, I do think Richardson and Bam are like two guys you should be looking to build around going forward. And then you should tank and get Zion, and you know, then you've got a squad.
There we go.
All right, one last one then. Sorry, yes. Dave.
No, you're good, man. This is fun.
What's your thoughts on Dwayne Wade? I mean, just general career, where he winds up, and whether or not he's holding the team a little hostage in his One Last Dance tour. Because, I mean, we're excited about it.
It's fun.
Yeah, I think so.
It's fun. You know, I do think that this sort of, like, last hurrah is better than a lot of guys. Like, he's not making a big deal out of it.
He kind of is.
No, I don't think he is. Look, Dwayne Wade's not going to pull a Kobe and shoot 50 times in the last game.
That's fair.
I don't think he's going to do that. I mean, it'd be cool if he did, because it was really cool when Kobe did it. It was fun. But I don't know, man. I think he's been really good in crunch time.
He has been.
He's shooting almost 40% on threes. Can you believe that?
Yeah. So I'm okay with it. He's been fun. I think it's a good story, and I think that if you've got a bad team, stuff like that is, you know, it's a good, I mean, it's a business, right? So you need stuff like that if you're not going to have a good team. And I think it's fine. I think ultimately, like in the grand scheme of things, hopefully people remember Dwayne Wade at his peak.
Yeah.
And, you know, that guy carried a team to a title. This is pre-LeBron, you know, he was incredible. I would say he's probably the third best two guard ever.
It's pretty low.
That's high praise for Jerry West.
No, I actually think I think I'd put him above Jerry West.
Okay. I know.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would, well, they trash you for one thing if you said that about Kobe. So I assume that you Kobe's second best behind
Jordan.
Yeah,
I think Kobe's second.
I still got Wade at second.
Over Kobe. That's fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Jerry West number one.
Sure. Yeah. So you're saying Jordan was a one?
I'm saying Jordan was a one, yeah. And he was a below average shortstop or whatever he played. All right.
They moved him to the outfield, man.
Is that true?
Yeah,
that makes more sense. Shortstop, you got it's too much baseball IQ. I don't think he was there.
He's 6'6". It's kind of hard.
Yeah, you're not
picking up those grounders.
A-Rod at 6'4" as a shortstop was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Yankees were smart to move him to third base.
Yeah, I agree, actually.
All right, before we go down the baseball rabbit hole here, Dave, anything you want to plug or anything you want to add before we let you go?
You know, just check out Count the Dings. We're doing a lot of really fun stuff on the back-to-back podcast. And I'm hosting Nerder She Wrote with Coach Thorpe, and that's been a really good time. Trying to replace Tom Haberstroh, which is pretty tough. And, check out all the stuff. It's all fun. And you know, if you're listening to this podcast, make sure you go and rate it and review it on iTunes.
Oh.
Something that people don't talk enough about. I don't do it enough on my podcast, so I'm sure you guys don't either. But that's my message. Don't worry about my stuff.
We self-promote here, man.
Oh, good.
Yeah, all we talk about is us and rating and reviewing us. In fact, somebody actually reviewed us and said all they asked for is rates and reviews, and they were sick of it. So
is that true?
It absolutely is. One person complained about it. No, it was like we put a little plug in at the end of every show, and it's one guy thought, no way, that's enough. That's too much. The last five seconds, I need that to talk about the team. He couldn't handle it.
Amazing. So. Well, as someone who has recently been scolded on Twitter numerous times for not promoting my stuff enough, anything I can do to help promote this. But for sure, go check out, the back-to-back podcast on the Count the Dings Network. And, I'm all over the place on that every week. So, yeah, it's a good time.
He's Dave DeFore, host of Nerder She Wrote, other podcasts on Count the Dings. He told you all about it. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me, finally. Jerks.
Every Friday, David and I look ahead to next week's slate of games and try to predict the Heat's record during that stretch. Feel free to play along with us. So let's look at the schedule. David, Friday night, tonight, the Heat travel to Phoenix to start off the 6-game road trip. Then on Saturday, on the second night of a back-to-back, they're in Los Angeles to play the Clippers. They hang out there until Monday when they play the Lakers. And then on Wednesday, they play in Utah. So Phoenix, Clippers, Lakers, Jazz, all on the road. Let's talk about Phoenix first. The Suns not probably going to be without Devin Booker, right? It sounds like still. So we got that game tonight. You'd hope that the Heat can find a way to win this game. This is kind of one of those games where if you lose, that panic meter, that tank train just kind of chugs along even faster. There's no reason for the Heat not to win this game other than the fact that they've lost games like this a whole lot this season.
That's a good point. The Heat are also going to be a little shorthanded, though, and they're going to be without Deion Waiters, of course. We're not sure about Goran Dragic. I don't think he was listed in their latest injury report, so it sounds like
did travel with the team, but you're right.
So he may be available to play, and for him, obviously, playing in Phoenix is a major milestone because you know he spent so much of his career there. But they are going to be without Wayne Ellington, who has provided such a boost off the bench and as a starter, at least offensively. And they're going to be notably without Hassan Whiteside, so that kind of favors Miami, I think. Although I feel like, you know, he probably would have been dominant in his matchup with rookie DeAndre Ayton.
He has a tendency to get up for those kind of matchups.
Yeah, like he wants to show up the rook. And that's fine. That's fair. I wish that was more consistent with all the other 29 players. But, you know, I think Bam Adebayo could match up well with Ayton also because they're relatively close in age. And I think Adebayo still wants to kind of prove himself. So we assume that Bam is going to start, and if that's the case, I like that matchup in Miami's favor. Again, without Booker, I think you said TJ Warren was going to be out as well. So that's a big part of Phoenix's limited offense. And, you know, they're looking to move Trevor Ariza. Ryan Anderson isn't much of a factor, et cetera. So, you know, that's a team that is struggling to find any kind of identity. Miami definitely has a clear advantage there.
Yeah, without Devin Booker, I don't know who scores for them. That defense has been shaky all year. I've got this as a win. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a pretty clear win for Miami, especially if Goran returns to the lineup.
All right. On the second night of a back-to-back, they play the Clippers in Los Angeles. The Clippers have been on a roll all season long. They're kind of like the Heat where, yeah, you don't really have any one star, but unlike the Heat, they do have some like B-level players and borderline all-stars. Tobias Harris is playing out of his mind this year. I mean, he's got a case for an all-NBA spot on one of these all-NBA teams if he keeps playing the way he is. Danilo Gallinari is healthy, looks great, stretching the floor for them. He's been a big difference for them. And then they've got this kind of, unlike the Heat, where there's almost redundancies, Their set of guards, they've got like four or five guards that they want to be playing, and they're all different enough and kind of complement each other enough that you could sort of play them together in any kind of combination. And I think that's really worked for them. And Doc Rivers, by the way, doing a hell of a job coaching that team. This is going to be a really tough matchup for the Heat.
An interesting one, too. And for our listeners, go check out Wes's most recent piece about the Clippers and how they've managed to string all these wins together. It was fantastically well reported and just a really good job talking to a number of the players on that team about why they kind of feel underappreciated and why they don't care and they're just going to do what they do anyway. And that's awesome. As far as the matchup with the Heat is concerned, you know, a lot of it changes depending on who's back in the lineup. We assume that Ellington will at the very least be back. And that Hassan might not be. I would assume that he probably needs more than one day. This is also the second night of a back-to-back. So they go right from Phoenix to Los Angeles, which could be kind of a bonding experience in and of itself. They're going to be without Hassan. Maybe they'll have Ellington back. Maybe they won't. And they'll need Ellington's offense in this particular matchup more than, I think, Hassan. You know, the center matchup is a tough one for Miami because they've got Marcin Gortat, who I think Whiteside could still match with because of his, you know, Gortat's declining level of athleticism, but the Montrezl Harris, Harrell, that matchup I think would be a good one for Bam Adebayo.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how that plays out, but I kind of like Miami's ability to match up with guys like Tobias Harris, and I don't know that as good a shooter as Gallinari is. I feel like if Spoelstra changes the lineup ever so slightly, maybe even put Justice in there as a starting three to match up with Gallinari, because I think Richardson will be
with Harris. Harris is the three there.
Gallinari's sorry, yeah, the yeah, 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 yeah.
So you think Winslow would guard? You think Winslow? Outside of Winslow, I just don't know who guards Tobias Harris. That's my issue with Tobias. I think he goes off in this game. Other than Winslow, who guards him?
James Johnson, I think.
Yeah, maybe James Johnson. But if you're playing James Johnson at the four and Gallinari's still in there, I mean, maybe if Gallinari is just sort of if he's just sort of going to camp out in the corner, even though he's been more willing to put the ball on the floor and do some stuff for himself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a little bit I'm worried about that tandem. I think the Clippers end up winning this game pretty easily.
I'm going to go about on that and say that Miami finds a way to win. I could be greatly disappointed. Again, a lot of that matchup depends on Goran being in the lineup, but I think they'll get the advantage against the Clippers somehow.
On Monday, they get to hang out in L.A., so that's going to happen. So I'm sure the Instagrams will be a lot of fun. And then on Monday, they play in they stay in Los Angeles, play the Lakers. Hopefully LeBron doesn't drop 51 on them again, because if that happens, they have no chance of winning. But the Lakers are turning things around lately. That defense looks good with Tyson Chandler in there. Brandon Ingram may or may not be back by then. Not really sure what the severity of his injury is. But either way, between LeBron, Lonzo, and Kyle Kuzma, those three have got a nice chemistry happening. Tyson Chandler is doing a lot for them defensively as far as getting defensive rebounds, communicating defensively. The Lakers seem to be on a roll lately. I like that. I like what they're doing right now.
I don't, you know that, but at the same time, I feel like they have improved, but only because I think they were so shaky at the start of the season. This is not something that I'm looking forward to. I feel like it's going to be a tough one for Miami to match up in LA after being there for 3 days. I will say this. I expect a big game from Dwayne Wade because this is his last opportunity to play in the Staples Center. Oh. So I would say that he probably could have a 30-point outing against his friend LeBron James. He's always gone geared up for those in the past. He missed when the Lakers were in town last time due to the birth of his daughter. So he'll never face LeBron James again, barring a matchup in the NBA Finals, which doesn't seem likely. So this should be a really, really fun game from that perspective. At this point, like if they manage to win against the Clippers and Phoenix, I think they'll have salvaged the road trip so far, and certainly this week. I'm okay with the Heat losing and Dwayne Wade finding a way to go off. So that's what I think. I think it'll probably be a Heat loss and a big game for Dwayne Wade.
I'm with you. I mean, I wasn't going to predict the big game from Wade, but hell with it. Why not? Let's get on board. Then they play in Utah on Wednesday. The Jazz still not quite figuring stuff out. Donovan Mitchell looks great as always. I shouldn't say as always. He was shaky to start the season, but he seems to be turning the corner here. It seems obvious what the Jazz need to fix. Their starting unit hasn't been good after it was good at the second half of last season with Derek Favors in there at the four next to Rudy Gobert. But all of a sudden, if you take Favors out and you put Jay Crowder in there at that small ball four type position, all of a sudden that goes to one of the best five man units in the league, and it just seems obvious that they should do that. And if they were to do it, I think those have been the teams that are tough to match up against. Those sort of lineups. And then the big thing here is whether or not Whiteside's there, because Whiteside got up for the Gobert matchup before. If Whiteside's back by then, I think that helps Miami, because he does, like I said, get up when these matchups against Gobert. He does have a personal vendetta against him, it seems. Yeah. So I think that's going to be kind of the swinging factor here.
I agree, and I think you're right that Whiteside could get up for the matchup against Rudy, and that it would probably favor Hassan Whiteside because I think Gobert's still a little limited with his overall health. But at the same time, I think you look at Utah, you look at the fan impact there, you look at the fact that they'll probably have the refs, you know, making a few calls in their favor because of that hostile environment in Utah, which you would never associate in Salt Lake City. But I think it'll skew towards the Jazz fairly heavily. And I think you can't count on Donovan Mitchell struggling offensively like he did against Miami. I think he'll go off and have a big game against the Heat. And you know, I think it'll be – actually, I think it'll be a pretty big blowout in Utah's favor, unfortunately.
Rubio tore him up last time too. And so between Rubio and Donovan Mitchell, I just don't know that the Heat have an answer defensively for those guys. I mean, you can only put Ron Magruder on one of them. You can only put Josh Richardson. I agree with you. I think this is going to be a blowout for Utah. I could see Whiteside returning for this game and sort of, you know, not coming all the way out to California, but sort of meeting him in Utah as opposed to getting out there for one of those first three games of the road trip. Even still, the Heat, I'm not sure they have an answer for Utah's backcourt, and so I give the edge to Utah. So you have them going 2-2 through the first four games of this road trip?
Correct.
And I've got them going 1-3, only win being against Phoenix, who is trying to and successfully being the worst team in the league. All right, and let us know what you guys think on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or email LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.